People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. You're listening to Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. I'm very pleased to tell you about my guest this week, Aviva Pelham. In a career spanning over 50 years, Aviva has enchanted her audiences, brightened stages, and spread the love of song in South Africa as well as abroad. And she remains a highly sought-after singer, director, motivational speaker, and lecturer. In 2022, Aviva's passion for young talent inspired her to initiate a competition to raise awareness among our young singers and to promote a reacquaintance with a repertoire which they may well be called on to perform as part of their international careers. And in fact, coming up later this month, the final round of the Aviva Pelham Operetta Competition invites full-time Opera UCT students to compete for solo arias and duet prizes. So a lot going on. Aviva, welcome, first of all.
Thank you so much, Rodney. Happy to be here.
Well, you've just said to me that June was an incredibly busy month for you, and you've made it through. But may I say, first of all, it's lucky, you're lucky that you are still so busy and still so passionate.
I'm very busy, which is just an absolute gift. I can't tell you what it means to me to be able to wake up in the morning and sometimes not sleep all that well at night, knowing that there's much to be done. I've always had that feeling, though, that time is incredibly important. Even at this stage of my life, there's time, and as long as there's energy and a bit of stamina, there's wonderful work to be done because of the medium that I'm dealing with, which, of course, is the brilliant international communicator, music. And there's always concerts to be mounted or directed, people to engage with. And it, fortunately, it seems to be still thriving.
But you know what, Aviva, I want to ask you, are you still, in fact, singing?
I am.
Are you really? Good, good,
good. I am, and it's such a joy. Sometimes I just even put on some backing tracks at home, orchestral backing tracks, and I suddenly find that I can be transported to the world of all sorts of things, musical theater or operetta or songs from all over with these orchestral backing track, which of course isn't nearly as good as singing with an orchestra.
The real thing,
which
yeah.
I've had the privilege of doing on many hundreds of occasions. Lucky, lucky girl. So very grateful. But I am. I find that possibly because there isn't huge pressure at this stage of my life, my voice seems to be just doing its thing.
But let's face it, Aviva, that shows that right through your life you've had a well-trained voice. You've not done
Correct.
Things you shouldn't have done. You haven't strained your voice. Your training, your technique keeps a voice going well into later years, doesn't it?
I try and tell young singers about that it doesn't matter which genre they're actually performing in. They really need to warm up and look after their voices, as you're saying. And I find that keeps the voice going a long time. In my case, I'm just delighted about the versatility because I'm not somebody who sticks totally to one genre. When I was singing quite a lot of opera in my early years and was offered at that stage My Fair Lady, it was such a no-no to do a musical if you were an opera singer. They just couldn't let you cross over in any way. And I mean, if you think about something like Just You Wait in Rehiggins, which is really belted out, and in my day, and of course I'm dating myself with great pleasure, there were no microphones on stage on us, not at all. There were 8 performances a week. There was no understudy. There was no repetiteur. So this actually was difficult vocal demands. But if you keep coming back to the correct voice production, you can look after your voice long. Whereas young singers sometimes, I'm not sure if you've noticed, a wonderful voice coming up who maybe this person hasn't got the correct mentorship and guidance. They choose repertoire which is too heavy and it pushes them too young. And these two unsuspecting, adorable vocal cords in this mystery box in the larynx, sometimes gets damaged that young.
It's a pity that, isn't it, as you say, Aviva, because people maybe get their heads get too big. They want to do something dramatic. They want to tackle heavy roles long before they are meant to.
Correct, yeah.
And how do you stop them? Because they've got these egos.
Only advise if you're in their orbit. It's one of the things I love to do if anybody does come and approach me. It's really interesting because I find that never mind teaching or suggesting techniques vocally, actually what they need more than anything else is life skills.
Oh, that's interesting.
That is what they need because it's not all about the voice, and you're quite right. They fall in love with the sound of their own voice, and people compliment them, and so they go louder and higher, and your voice can't take it that young and shouldn't actually have to at any stage.
That's true. But now, Aviva, the other interesting thing that I'm dying to ask you about is recently we've seen you on the stage in an acting role for the first time for a long time in Stephen Sondheim's A Little Night Music, where you played that grand, can't remember the character's name, in a wheelchair.
Madame Armfeldt.
Now, how did you feel about that? Because I heard you saying that Stephen Sondheim's music is not easy.
I fell in love with Stephen Sondheim's music a long time ago and have done quite a few one-woman shows on that. I also had a couple of colleagues whom I used to perform with. And then I had the joy, almost 30 years ago, of doing The Witch in Into the Woods. What a gorgeous, gorgeous role that was. And I just seemed to be one of those addicts, those Sondheim addicts. What happens is that Sondheim doesn't care whether you like him or not. What Sondheim's doing is, with his authenticity, is he's saying, life isn't always beautiful. People are not always nice. And he has such insight into human nature that he's not afraid to show the darker side of human nature and puts in front of us how we manage to mess up relationships. And that's really about our lives. And although he's not always immediately accessible, I find enormous joy in his music and harmony and singableness. I think I've just made up that word. Well, the other thing I love about him is that he's a genius wordsmith. What he does with his lyrics, and of course he was 24 when he wrote the lyrics for West Side Story.
That's right, with
the great Bernstein. Can you imagine how intimidated he was? Or maybe not. And I love his lyrics. Do you know, listening backstage and having sat in on literally scores of rehearsals, you'll suddenly listen to a pattern of words where he's rhymed it and he turns it upside down and then does some other plays on the word. So brilliant. There's always something more there.
I want to ask you more, to hear you speak so passionately about Sondheim. I want to do a little bit more, but before that, let's take your first piece of music, because it is by Stephen Sondheim from A Little Night Music, called A Weekend in the Country. Is that what we'll hear now?
I'd love to listen to this. And the thing is that actually Madame Armfeldt is not in A Weekend in the Country, which ends Act One. But that didn't stop me. I stayed backstage every single night, singing everybody else's line and just getting the full joy of Sondheim's magic.
An invitation here, ma'am, delivered by hand. And ma'am, I notice the stationery's engraved and very grand. Petra, how too exciting, just when I need it. Petra, such elegant writing, so chic, you hardly can read it. What do you think? Who can it be? Even the ink, no, here, let me. Your presence, just think of it, Petra, is kindly, it's at a chateau, requested, etc., etc. Madam Leonora Arms, oh no! A weekend in the
country, we're invited.
What a horrible plot.
A weekend in the country, I'm excited.
No, you're not.
A weekend in the country, just imagine.
It's completely depraved.
A weekend in the country,
it's insulting.
It's engraved.
Is that woman, is that arm belt?
Oh, the actress,
oh, the ghoul. She may hope to make a charm belt, but she's mad if she thinks I would be such a fool as to
weekend in the country.
How insulting.
And I'm nothing to wear.
A weekend in the country.
Here, the last place I'm going is there. Guess what, an invitation.
Guess who begins with an A.
Our belt is at a relation to the decrepit Desiree. Guess when we're asked to go, sir, see, sir, the date there. Guess where, a fancy chateau, sir.
Guess too, who's lying in wait there, setting her traps, fixing her.
Darling, perhaps a change of pace.
Oh, no.
A weekend in the country would be charming, and the air would be fresh.
A weekend with that woman
in the country,
in the flesh.
I've some business with her mother.
See, it's business.
Oh, no, don't. But the business with her mother would be hardly the business I'd worry about.
Just a weekend in the country, smelling jasmine,
watching little things grow.
A weekend in the country.
Go.
My darling will simply say no.
Oh. A weekend.
How very amusing.
A weekend.
But also inept.
A weekend, of course, we're refusing.
Au contraire, you must accept.
Oh, no.
A weekend in the country.
But it's frightful.
No, you don't understand. A weekend in the country is delightful if it's planned. Wear your hair down and a flower. Don't use makeup, dress in white. She'll grow older by the hour and be hopelessly shattered by Saturday night. Spend a weekend in the country.
We'll accept it.
I'd a feeling you would. A weekend in the country.
Yes, it's only polite that we should.
Good.
A Weekend in the Country, that, in fact, is the music of Stephen Sondheim from A Little Night Music, which is just run at the Theatre on the Bay here, and in the cast, Aviva Pelham, who's my guest this week on People of Note. And Aviva, just going back to that show, what a cast. You had an A-list cast to work with. Mm-hmm. Jonathan Rocksmith, Marcel Mayer, Samantha Pure, mm-hmm. Kate Normington. It was incredible.
And I haven't actually worked with any of them before. I saw Fred Abramser and Marcel Mayer's Assassins, which was put on at the old Space Theatre some years ago. It was so brilliant. I went two or three times, and ever since then thought I'd really love to be directed by Fred Abramser. And finally,
after all these years,
it came through with people, as you say. I mean, Jonathan and I have been speaking for such a long time about doing something together, and both of us love Sondheim. And although I didn't actually interact particularly with him, but it was such an interesting experience for me to come back into this rehearsal schedule and a rehearsal room for weeks, which I haven't done. I've been doing concerts and directing, and those are often, the energy is all about the preparation, and for just two or three days before a huge concert, everything has to come together. So that's a different kind of synergy. But this one, watching each other rehearse and grow with this direction of Fred Abramser, it was really a great joy for me.
May I ask you, did he live up to expectations, Fred? Because apparently he's a marvelous director.
What I love best about him is he doesn't dictate. He doesn't say, no, it needs to be like this or don't do that. He constantly has suggestions, and it's in a very mild way, which not all directors can manage. I just loved it. It certainly did live up to expectations. He's had it all in his head. I need to tell you, it's a very difficult piece. It's incredibly bitty. And all of us, even into dress rehearsal, were going, what scene is next? Whereas he had it all sorted, of course, a long
time in
advance.
I believe it is a very complex piece of writing, but also psychologically, apparently, the many layers that he explores.
Many layers, lots of different relationships, and it all comes to light. Betrayal, love, lust, and some of the darker sides of characters as well. It's fascinating to watch and see it evolve. And when you're working with performers of this level, it's never the same because you're feeling what's happening that evening with whoever you're playing across from. You're feeling the audience and you're constantly growing. Otherwise, you're not a very good artist. And so there are changes. It was remarkable, truly. Mm.
But it really sounds as though you thoroughly enjoyed it. Mm. And when you were offered the role, did you say yes immediately or did they have to twist your arm? Bearing in mind that you hadn't done something like this for so long.
They were very kind to me, both Fred and also Cape Town Opera, who of course are my family those years. And I was incredibly tempted immediately, but I had to have a negotiate with myself. I had to be realistic and I had to say, are you going to be able to manage this? Mm-hmm. Actually, besides all the bits and pieces of dialogue, there is a very, very demanding song, which I didn't know. And when I looked it up, I was so frustrated with it because it wasn't nearly as wonderful as I was hoping I could have as a challenge. But it's an interesting song, that liaison, where she's going back in her memory on lots of different affairs. Mm-hmm. Interesting lady. Mm-hmm. I found that good. Yes, and lots of words to remember. And
The old mind working again.
Completely different range. You know, yes. I was a coloratura soprano.
That's
I have sung a Queen of the Night long ago. but I have sung the soubrette in between, and I've done a lot of musical theatre, and suddenly this is actually written in what I would describe as the bass clef. I mean, mezzos and contraltos have sung it, and it really took me into a completely different register, and I found that a wonderful challenge. It was so different.
Mm. That shows, you know, what a musician you are, that you find that a challenge. Mm. What could be more different than those coloratura arias if you're singing in the realm of a mezzo and a contralto?
Yeah, in chest voice.
And as we were saying, Aviva, just before we came, what a pity it was such a short run. Oh. Because I know a lot of people wanted to see it and couldn't. And it did well at the box office, didn't it?
I think it was almost sold out. Possibly the first few. I always think it's such a pity that the first few performances, people haven't got the word of mouth yet.
Yes, that's
true.
Because
there was a bit of a bun fight towards the end, which gives a cast a lot of pleasure.
A lot of pleasure.
I would have loved to have carried on because I live very close to the Theatre on the Bay. So for me, it was just a question of putting on my rollerblades and going down.
And one of the things, just as we head to our next piece of music, which is by Queen, is that I'm fascinated by your absolute passion or love for young people. You enjoy working with young people and enjoy getting them, as I said in our introduction, getting them to perform works they may be called on to perform later in their international career. So young people play a big part in your life.
Sometimes they seek me out themselves. Sometimes I'll get a call to say there are a group of buskers at the waterfront. Sometimes I see somebody on an island in the middle of the traffic. And I've had the enormous privilege of coming across and working with anybody from a parking attendant to a caretaker, a gardener, a waiter, a trolley pusher. But when the young singers cross my path, I'm very, very keen to stand in as mentor. My first goal always is education. So if they're young, I try and get them back into a schooling system. And of course, they need the guidance vocally because, as we were saying, it's always very tempting to sing too loud and too high and do things that might damage the chords. And so if I can work with people over a little amount of time, I can't take everybody on as a singing student, but I try and teach them not only about the finer points that they're singing, language has got to be correct, total respect, first of all, for the composer and the style. But I also find I'm teaching them life skills because they need to know about showing up. They need to know about perseverance, resilience, commitment, discipline. And all of us human beings, we need to learn these important characteristics so that we can function not only as singers or anything else, but as human beings. So whenever I could find singers or when they crossed my path, I would put them together and mount performances so that I could use my platforms to shine the light on their talent. And I used to call this broadly Viva the Voices. Viva, of course, being me. It's Italian for long live. It's also Xhosa, Viva Mandela. And so I would use Viva the Voices. I also had something called Viva the Music, Viva the Children, etc. And use that platform and get them out there so that they can feel what it would be like and see if they want to put in what they need to become a worthy artist.
Worthy, yes. And the discipline, as you say, show up prepared, show up on time, all that. Yeah. So we've got some music for the youngsters coming up with a group, Queen, no less. The show must go on.
The reason I've chosen this is because one of my favorite platforms is Morning Melodies, which is such a brilliant invention that Rodney Phillips brought from Sydney Opera House many, many years ago. And Baxter does it once a month on a Wednesday, usually on the, and they give me December. You're not going to believe this. I'm coming up to my 25th December of Morning Melodies, and it's a perfect opportunity for me to use my platform. And I've had all sorts of people there, by the way, not only singers. I like to put on excellent young instrumentalists or dancers as well, because these are my sister art forms. And I've had a group whom I've been working with for a long time called Heavenly Cortez. They're four young men from Khayelitsha who make wonderful music. And recently, they chose this Queen number, so I thought it might be appropriate.
Perfect, Aviva.
Empty spaces, what are we living for? Abandoned places, I guess we know the score. On and on, does anybody know what we are looking for? Another hero, another mindless crime behind the curtain.
Yeah.
is the group Queen here on Fine Music Radio for you, and the show must go on. It's the choice of Aviva Pelham, who is my guest on People of Note this week here on Fine Music Radio, brought to you by Peter Tureen Productions. Aviva, you know what? I want to delve into your past just a little teeny weeny bit, because they say that your career has spanned over 50 years, which is a long time. It's a long time to be on stage, to be singing. Had you always wanted to sing? For as long as you can
always,
remember.
Always, always. I know that my mom put me on the stage when I was 3 in East Deptford, and I wouldn't start until I found her. But then I started. You know, both my parents were very musical, and I think it was one of the miraculous glues that kept them together, because they had never met before my mom came to Rhodesia to marry my father. He had proposed to her by letter, and 10 days later they married, which meant that they really didn't know each other before. But music was very prevalent in both of them, and they brought it to their 3 girls. We had music in the house all the time. We were a bit of Von Trapp family singers, instruments and a lot of music in the car, and music at meals and music at picnics. And so it was so second nature to me. Nobody kind of expressed an interest in me singing. I think I was a very tiny young girl, and I was asthmatic, and everybody could sing in my family, so I was not at all special. And I grew up not knowing if I could do it or not, just knowing that I had to try and express myself with my own body. It's an incredible feeling. Of course, ballet dancers have this, and they have a far more physically punishing journey than singers. But later, when I realized if I could possibly get into opera singing, I had to learn that that art form encapsulates so many different ones and somehow seemed to answer all the needs that I was having to express myself in this lifetime. And music, it had to be music, it had to be vocal, and for me, it turned out to be opera. I didn't seem to cross the path of musicals in those days. Maybe it would have been a temptation, but I'm so pleased I did it that way around, the classical, the demands.
And we benefited as well. The audience benefited, because you discovered you had a voice and were able to start training and work on it.
Oh, they turned me down at College of Music as a second subject, because I was accepted for piano for my first. They turned me down for second subject, which just about killed me. I was so distressed and thinking how useless I must be if they can't even accept me for second subject, and I was 18. But I did hear about the opera course. I auditioned for Professor Gregorio Fescanaro, who, of course, changed the face of opera in South Africa, and he accepted me. And from then on, I was so sure this was the way I needed to express myself. I love the fact that you can act. You must act when you're on the stage.
And a lot of opera singers don't know how to act.
Gone are the days of just stand there and sing,
yes,
you know.
Yes, yes. But can you remember your first professional role?
Yes, of course. It was Norina in Don Pasquale.
Oh, right.
Yes, and I loved her. She was just delicious. And it was a fortunate role, because there are only 5 leads and the other 4 men. So I was able to show the femininity, and Angela Gobato was my director then and on many occasions. And I have said this, also in print, that without a doubt, Angelo was the person who impacted me most artistically in my life. Lucky to have him in the debut as well, to be able to show the various versatility in acting. So it sort of set me on the right path. I remember David Tidbold. I'm not sure if anybody listening remembers,
yes,
David Tidbold.
I bet you they do. They'll remember Fescanaro. They'll remember Angela Gobato.
These are
they'll
important people David in the Tidbold. Music scene.
And they will remember Rodney Phillips.
Good. David came backstage after my debut, and he just stood there quietly and he said, "What's next?" So I was lucky. I was lucky. I got lovely opportunities, and I tried to take any that I thought would help me grow as an artist, as a human being. And I tried to make good decisions if I felt that probably I couldn't do it, I couldn't serve it well enough, or it was the wrong voice type. One's got to be very careful with mm-hmm. that.
Did you start as a soprano?
Yes.
Right from the beginning you were
yes.
a soprano.
Yes, I was.
The light, high coloratura.
Yes. I did a lot of those soubrette roles, which suited me at the time when I was young. I remember thinking, oh, I must do these while I'm young. They're the maid or the young ingenue, and very delightful. So I did all the Figaro, Così fan tutti, Magic Flute, until I got to the Puccini and Verdi, which you could see by the smile on my face. Oh, my goodness. the joy of it, the thrill of it, the terror of it. You know?
But which Verdi and Puccini roles did you sing?
Well, Puccini, the only one that at the moment comes to mind is Musetta in La Boheme, because I performed her many, many times and she fitted like a glove. So when anybody says, what's your favorite opera role, it would be Musetta. So it's not Mimi, it's not the lead, it's the other character, and she was just so carefully, cleverly drawn by Puccini. I just love
and sings one
her.
Of the nicest and finest and most memorable arias Act Two.
And the ensemble. So I loved doing Musetta. I did quite a few Verdis. I did a Rigoletto and a Traviata. I did Falstaff, the Nannetta. And there were other Puccinis too, Gianni Schicchi.
Oh, yeah.
I sang the Lauretta, who's got a two-page aria, but the most important piece there is the O mio babbino caro.
Right.
I mean, it's two pages.
And it's so unexpected in the opera,
suddenly,
it's completely different from the other music.
She comes with this beautiful, gorgeous piece. Yeah.
Did you ever stop singing professionally? Did you decide, that's it, I'm not doing any more opera, operetta?
Not really. In fact, I did the turn of the screw at 4.5 months pregnant. And the reason that's funny is because the governess is a sexually frustrated British woman at the turn of the century. And I kept hearing this little one inside me kicking and saying, oh, I like this music.
So, and that's not an easy piece.
That I have to say, I take my hat off to Angelo Gobato for daring. You know, there's the risk that people take, like Cape Town Opera just did now with A Little Night Music, possibly.
Yes, yes,
Angelo
yes.
did that with Turn of the Screw. But he realized that the Henry James was so clever and that people who were interested in the literary sense might come. And we did it in Grahamstown first, and then we did it here and a repeat season. That was another role that was so untypically me. I actually, when I was given it, I started learning, and then I went back into the offices there at Cape Town Opera, and I said, I think you've got the wrong person. I don't think I can do this. Sexually frustrated English woman. But what a challenge for me, you know, this woman who is so suppressed herself that she starts imagining all these incredible
things. That wonderful music of Benjamin Britten, the way he set it.
Difficult, but worth it. Yeah.
I want to talk about your operetta competition, but while we're talking about that, your next piece features Placido Domingo, quite a famous piece by Federico Toroba. Tell me now why you've chosen this, Amor e Vida di Mai Vida.
Well, when I started thinking about the operetta competition, it was obviously going to be French operetta, because Offenbach was actually the person at the Paris exhibition in 1855 who started this trend for operetta. And of course, we immediately think about Vienna with Leha and Johann Strauss Jr.
Yeah.
But there are the others as well. And I also realized quite recently that I would add in the Spanish zarzuela, because it's their operetta. It's very, very similar. It still needs to be sung well, but it's light and accessible. And one of the people who entered my competition a couple of years ago, because this one's going to be the fifth, he sang this wonderful song, Amor, Vida, de mi Vida. But I particularly love this Domingo interpretation.
Oh, yeah.
Plácido Domingo, who else, singing that music by Toroba, Amor, Vida de mi Vida, and another choice of Aviva Pelham, whom we're enjoying listening to, and your long life story of 50 years on stage. Aviva, this operetta competition, I was just thinking, you know, when I was younger and mad about Wagner, I used to hear operetta, even if it was by Lehar or Strauss, and think, ugh, that's nothing serious. But then the more I listened, the more I realized the incredible technique that you need to be able to sing that music, the vocal flexibility, all that sort of thing. So I had to eat my words on many occasions.
I think everybody's allowed to have their own opinion. The thing about operetta, I had sung quite a lot of it. And by the way, it's 55 years, can you believe?
Oh,
I did my debut here in 1972 in Artscape. I think the thing about operetta is that you're absolutely right. One has to still be able to sing extremely well. It's vocally demanding, as it is in opera. However, it's kind of borderline grand opera and musical theater. It's got dialogue. Mm. It's got humor. What I love best about the genre and its particular brand is there's this lilt. There's this charm.
Oh,
this
charm
simplicity.
Is the word.
It's sort of
yes.
like schwung, we say in German.
Yeah.
And I found that nobody was doing it in Cape Town. There seemed to be several years of dearth, and I just approached Professor Jeremy Silver at Opera UCT and said, I'd really like to do this while I can. And so there are actually prizes. There's 30,000 rand in prizes.
Oh, my goodness me.
Which
look
I have to save for during the year. And I want it to be some kind of motivation for them. And so not only are the vocal teachers learning about operetta, because I think that some of them didn't know about it before. But also we're sending out this repertoire, and their students are coming with arias, and there's also a duet section. And this is the fifth year. I'm feeling like it's coming. There's more interest. People are coming to see the competition. It's filling up very nicely. Last year was very exciting. So I'm hoping it works. And here's hoping that possibly Cape Town Opera will think of putting on something, maybe a Merry Widow or a Gypsy Baron.
Yes.
It's lovely entertainment. And
Merry Widow is a remarkable piece, isn't it, really? Yeah. So it's called the Aviva Pelham Operetta Competition. And this is actually coming up. It's on the 18th of August, isn't it?
18th of August, yes, at the Baxter at 7. And I think you can buy tickets on the evening. Could it be web tickets or
something like that? Yeah, don't worry. But I want to talk to you, because as always, time is against us. I just want to talk to you briefly about your launching into directing, because you've directed shows, competitions, various things. Is it something you enjoy? Because that's a completely different discipline.
It is such a different discipline. Some people think if you could sing, then you can direct. And it is so very, very different. I've always wanted to do it. I always organized little concerts even when I was younger. And I found that I often was left on my own. And so I had to invent how to perform. And slowly the direction seemed to be coming through. I did all these Viva the Voices and many, many others, like all those Morning Melodies, as well as the Amy Foundation, where I direct their galas every year, and I'm coming up to number 19. So you can see I'm a long-haul girl.
Absolutely.
And I'm a very loyal girl.
Yes.
And I was just so thrilled when Louis Hahnemann approached me some years ago. I think it was 2018, maybe even earlier than that. And he said, we discussed how the orchestra tends to be seen in very elitist eyes, whereas, as we know, Cape Town Philharmonic Orchestra is astounding in its versatility. And he said, would you be prepared to direct something like that? And we started, which at the time was called the Community Gala, and we changed it to Variety Gala. There's been a Thanksgiving concert. There's been a communal spectacular. And we've done at least one a year. Rodney, it is such a highlight for me. I can't tell you. I think it's really the best thing in my year, because it's in this building. We bring in Cape Town Opera, Cape Town City Ballet, Jazz Art, Unmute, Zip Zap. And so I've got all these different art forms. And then what I do, because I'm a crossover queen, I mix them together.
Okay.
And so you can have a Lakme duet sung by wonderful opera singers with Zip Zap up on the silk. Or you can have a wheelchair dancer with a strength act. And it's a big highlight for me to direct these concerts.
Can we stop, please? And as you say, a crossover queen, Aviva, but you hear certainly a lot of different music. And I see your next piece, in fact, is called Prayer in the Night. Tell us what to expect here.
So that is exactly crossover, and a style I love so much, because it is based on the Sarabande by Handel, but it's sung by Amici Forever, who, of course, are very accessible and popular. So for me, in my mind, I often think, what about the people who've never been to a symphony concert before and they're hearing Cape Town Philharmonic Orchestra and they're thinking, too heavy, too serious, too elitist? And they come and they hear these pieces from groups that they might have heard of, and it is such a wonderful dramatic piece that also has to be sung beautifully but accessible. And of course, because I've got Cape Town Opera as one of the groups who are involved in this concert, and because they're my family, I always choose wonderful pieces for them. And it's one of my favorite choices, this one.
Oh,
Amici, the group Amici Forever, and that piece called Prayer in the Night. Aviva Phelim is my guest. We're fast approaching the end of the program, and there's so much I still want to ask you, because, I mean, apart from opera, operetta, the variety concerts, you did something early this year somewhat different, March for Freedom.
Very, very interesting piece. Elvis Sibeko approached me rather late, and I was incredibly tempted to do it, because it dealt with the restrictions that were happening during apartheid and how this affected the major groups in our country, black, colored, white and Indian, as Mandela said, and what music were they doing before apartheid, during apartheid and after apartheid. So it needed enormous research, and of course it's dealing with a subject that I have often grappled with. It's about the majority of the people of South Africa being barred, restricted, and demeaned. And I just realized I wanted to research it and put it on so that it was moving and meaningful. And this is another situation where I try to use the opportunities that I have had to expose what other people either haven't had or can hopefully have from now on. And of course, my parents were in a very similar situation. They were, in their lives, often put in a situation where they were as well restricted, demeaned, and I feel very close to the subject living in South Africa now. So it was a wonderful piece to work on. I asked Basil Apollos to come and be with me on it, because I very much admire and respect his experiences. And we did it at the Joseph Stone.
Oh,
and
yes,
so on Human Rights Day. So it felt like a very...
Everything came together.
Yes, it all came together.
But now, Aviva, as I said, we're nearing the end of the program, but just one quick last question. Of all these things you've done, and you've done so much, is there anything that you're longing still to do?
Yes, I'm so pleased you asked, Rodney, because one of the concerts I've been longing to have a date for is a tribute to the Eon Group. So I knew some of the Eon Group. I only came to South Africa after my schooling. I knew Ruth Goodwin and May Abrahamser, and I put them on my Morning Melodies and any other platforms that I had straight away. I knew Virginia Davids and sang Divine Divas with her all over the world on cruise liners and also in London. Yeah, yeah. And of course, she's alive and well and amazing, Virgie Davids. I knew Sidwell Hartman, who's not. But they are dying out, and I feel that acknowledgement and respect has not been shown properly to the Eon Group. Mm. And I have done a lot of research. There are wonderful documentaries, but nobody's actually done the big concert, which I would first of all like to do at the Joseph Stone. That feels right to me. Mm-hmm. And possibly using Cape Town Opera.
Do it.
So that we've got wonderful singers with the orchestra, because the people of the Eon Group were not only talented, but they were courageous. And
they must have been, of course, in those days.
I have such respect.
No, please do. It makes absolute sense for someone like you to do something like that. So there you are. You have to go and do it. And then we'll talk again. How about that?
I'd love that.
Aviva, we have to end there. But I see you've chosen the Piazzolla piece, Adios Nonino, to end with.
It's actually my favorite piece in the whole world. Or have I said that about the other four as well? I really love this piece with the bandoneon and the piano. And it starts so light and the orchestra comes in. But the second time round, it becomes huge and wonderful. I hope the listeners enjoy it as well.
Aviva, you've been a delight to speak to. And congratulations on, well, I now have to say 55 years in this business. And do the Eon Group.
Thank you so much for having me here, Rodney. Thank you.
Thank you.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.